Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us. David, if you could just give us a hello just so we know that your audio is working.
Hi there, everything okay?
Yep, we can hear you fine. Thank you. We'll get started in just a couple minutes. Just waiting for a couple more board members to jump on. Thank you. Ellen, I got an email from Ben that says he's on the phone with City of Orlando Fire and he's running a little late. So if you don't mind starting us off in a couple minutes, that'd be great, just in case it takes him a little longer.
Okay.
Clark, are you able to just give us a quick hi so we know your audio is connected?
I'm here. I'm on the road right now, so it's kind of just joining by audio only.
Great, thank you. Hey, Carrie, can you hear us okay and can you give us a hello?
Hi, Vanessa. Hi,
Hey, Carrie.
everyone.
Thanks for joining us. So I know Rosemary said she was gonna join us as well, so I think she's probably gonna be on here. But Ellen, if you did want to get started, you're welcome to.
Okay, we'll call to order the special session of the Planning and Zoning and Keep Winter Park Beautiful and Sustainable Boards to talk about our sustainability action plan and update it. Vanessa, do you want I'm not seeing the agenda.
Yes, I'm bringing it up right now. It's on a different screen. There we go. There we go. Can you see that okay?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Excellent.
We want to kick off our discussion of the sustainability action plan in order to update it. And Vanessa.
No worries, Ellen. You can go ahead and just read that for this work session and future joint, just so we can have
Okay,
that.
for this work session and future joint board work sessions on the Sustainability Action Plan update, public comments will be taken. Members of the public are encouraged to participate virtually. Public comment form is available at cityofwinterpark.org live broadcasts 30 minutes before the start of each session. If you'd like to provide comments prior to the meeting, please send them to the sustainability at cityofwinterpark.org. These comments will not be read publicly into the record, will not be read publicly into the record during the meeting, but will be sent to the board members and staff.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Ellen. Let me see if anyone else, Ben hasn't joined yet. So just wanted to say thank you to everyone for coming together. We're going to give you a really brief overview. You already received the PowerPoint and kind of were directed towards our action plans of the past and our action plan, our annual reports of the past. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Chris so he can start the introduction and we'll go from there.
All right, well, good morning or good afternoon. Thanks for everyone joining us. Again, we're here to look at a potential update to our sustainability action plan. So in September, the City Commission tasked us with taking a look at an update to our sustainability action plan that was adopted by the City Commission back in 2015. Vanessa, if you want to go to the next slide. Part of the reason for that is, well, again, just a little quick history again on the development of our sustainability board and the joining of our Keep Winter Park board and the city's Environmental Review Board in 2012. At that point, we had 15 members, but then that was since now reduced to our current 7 members a couple of years ago. But between basically 2013 and 2015, that board worked at putting together a sustainability action plan for the city, coming out of the city or the mayor's goal of a green local government certification for the city. So, Vanessa, if you want to go to the next slide. You know, as Vanessa said, you've all received a copy of that, or if not, you can go to our website to take a look at the sustainability action plan. It's basically broken into 7 main categories. There's roughly about 10 metrics or so per category. So we have roughly 70, I think it's maybe 81 metrics that's currently within our sustainability action plan, with goals that are set at different year intervals. And with 2015 being when it was adopted, 2012 was the baseline for this plan. And our first set of goals was in 2020. So we've obviously now reached that point and beyond. So our next set of goals are looking at 2030. So part of the reason for this update is to go back and look and see, you know, what we were able to accomplish or not accomplish with those 2020 goals. Also to decide whether or not we maybe needed an interim goal, potentially 2025, you know, given that we had a roughly a 5-year period within our first set of goals. And then even looking beyond that, you know, some potential goals that you'll hear out there, such as Ready for 100, those are goals that are looking at the year 2050. And currently we don't have any goals within the program that reach out that far. So also looking at that. There are also just other things that we are interested in adding to the plan. You know, we've recently joined on as a member of the regional collaboration for the East Central Florida Regional Resilience and Climate Coalition. So, you know, we want to maybe look at a little bit more in regards to climate change. That wasn't necessarily something that was talked about within the existing plan. We also wanted to look at ways we could potentially integrate more equity into the plan as we look at some of these items. So that gives you just a really quick snapshot as to where we are and some of the things that we're looking at trying to move forward. So, you know, I think at this point, while we're not necessarily looking to rewrite the entire plan, you know, I think it's still important that we, you know, are willing to look at everything. Everything is still under consideration. So, you know, we kind of throw this question out there of, what do you think needs to be included within the city sustainability action plan, even without even taking a look at what our current objectives and indicators are? You know, you don't necessarily have to answer that question right now, but, you know, what we're asking is for board members, you know, not only in this session, but as they work through this, as we work through this process over the next several months, you know, if you have ideas or thoughts that come to your mind, we want to make sure that those get integrated into the plan. So feel free to contact Vanessa or I or other board members so that we, you know, take advantage of those ideas that you have so that we can integrate them into this next update. So Vanessa, if you want to move forward from there.
Thanks, Chris.
So we talked, so, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so we're going to briefly going to go through this because the whole point of this work session is for board members to speak to each other, a discussion between board members. So most of you have received this via email. So I'll go through, as Chris mentioned, we have many indicators under different categories. As you can imagine, planning falls under several of these categories. So we just grabbed several of them that are kind of planning related that we could see this board being interested in. That's not to say there aren't others. We generally kind of looked at how we're doing in these indicators. Green meaning we're kind of on track or meeting the goals. Yellow meaning we're not quite approaching the goals, but have, you know, are able to figure out the metrics. And then red normally is we've had these indicators that we're really unable to track in a good way, in a way that we can replicate over every year. So the first one that we'd like to look at with you is the BEW8, which is under buildings, energy, and water. And that one essentially talks about the percentage of buildings that are meeting the City of Winter Park's green building standards. I'm not going to read through all this, but basically in 2011, there was a resolution that was passed that would encourage LEED-like standards in city-owned buildings whenever the project resources allowed for it. That kind of LEED-like language has made it very challenging for green building standards to really be pushed in a lot of our new projects. So this is something where, you know, maybe part of our discussion here is, you know, can we give this more teeth if this is something that is important to the board and to residents, like many neighboring cities and counties have done. So if we were to look at the percentage and the goals that we had for 2020, obviously we're not approaching those for 2020 and definitely not 2030. Next one, local food and agriculture. We have an indicator that looks at the percentage of residents that are within half a mile of local healthful food assets. This is something that we're looking at in terms of community gardens, farmers markets, grocery stores, restaurants, and urban farms, and then basically seeing what percentage of our residents are within half a mile of these different assets. So we are approaching targets that were set for 2020. Obviously, the 2030, we're definitely much more far off. So considerations, is this something we want to keep tracking? Are these the same kind of locations that make sense in 2020? This was all written in 2015. So just kind of a little overview of that one. This is also kind of, you know, when we say community gardens, farm, what do we mean? This is an example of those. We can go deeper into any of those with you. Mobility and urban form, we actually have already met with the Transportation Advisory Board and the transportation team. I just wanted to bring this to y'all as well. We are looking at vehicle miles traveled in the previous iteration of the action plan. It's something that more than likely we will not include through our conversations with transportation advisory board, but also thinking about what are some good kind of indicators to get to this idea of reducing BMT in relation to how can we improve air quality and also improve the pedestrian and bicycling environment. So trying to get to the things that, you know, when people talk about vehicle miles travel, what they might be thinking, but how to actually have a metric that works for us that we can actually track. As you can see here, it's been in development since the original action plan was put in 2015. Another one kind of related again to green building standards. This metric would look at LEED in particular, their neighborhood development certification, and whether or not this is something that we could have in our city. As you can see here, you know, it's been zero for several years. The nearest ones are in Miami and Doral. There's none in Central Florida to date. This is another one that's kind of tough and we just have not been able to move the needle on. And so again, you know, is there a better indicator for us to kind of get to, again, this kind of environment that this describes where there is, you know, conservation of natural resources as well as providing open space, walkable areas, considerations for the conservation of water and energy, and at a neighborhood scale level. So bringing back once again, mobility and urban form, you know, in the past, in the 2015 report, this was done through the walk score, the transit score, and bike score. What we've realized is obviously this is a proprietary scoring system. The algorithm of how they calculate it is not open to the public. So it's difficult to say how and if this is an adequate or logical way of looking at our walkability and our bikeability. and our transit use. So if you were to look at those numbers, you'll see we are not approaching those targets. But again, it's also very difficult because we don't know the algorithms that go behind it. So once again, we have already met with the Transportation Advisory Board and the transportation manager, Sarah, who's on the line as well. And we are looking into better metrics for this, but wanted to bring it up to P&Z as well, as to start thinking about, are there better indicators, again, for these kind of concepts? And then in regards to green space, we have also met with our Parks and Recreation Board, as well as our Urban Forestry Division and Natural Resources Manager, and discussed these with them. Again, wanted to bring it to you as well. There was definitely conversation about what should be considered green space in terms of accessibility, you know, something like parks versus something that might not be as accessible for folks, making sure that when we're looking at this, that we're not including things like medians that no one can really use. Perhaps they're green space, but they're not necessarily something that people can play in or use as a public resource. And then here's just a general list of the actions that were listed in our sustainability action plan related to planning and where we are. And you'll notice that there are some that we have been able to kind of have some progress on. The first one related to the comprehensive plan, I believe that evaluation done was prior to me joining the city. Not a lot of the policies that were recommended were actually put into the comp plan, which again brings us to this issue of just not having the teeth to kind of move a lot of these goals forward. So really important, this conversation with the planning and zoning board related to that. And then just in general, you can take a look at those actions and go a little closer on your own. So I'll just bring it back to the question that Chris posed and leave it open. I see Ben has joined us. And leave it open for the boards to discuss, what do you think should be included in the city's sustainability action plan update? And that's related to goals, objectives, indicators, and or actions. Go for it, Ben.
All right. Hey guys, thank you for jumping right in. Sorry, I was a little late. I was on the call with the City of Orlando Fire reviewer, and they're always right. So I needed to listen, but I appreciate you guys explaining kind of where we're at. A lot of hard work's been put into this so far, and a lot of hard work previously with the plan that we had. We're just looking to really just, you know, make sure we're staying on top of it. We're setting great goals that we can track and hold ourselves accountable for, and certainly love impact and feedback from you guys on that. So look like Owen had his hand up. So we'll turn it over to Owen for right now.
Yes, thank you. I have some questions for Vanessa, I think primarily. In fact, I have about six questions based on your presentation, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Is there a reason we're not interested in LEED Silver? I mean, we're starting pretty high up, and there is a tremendous cost difference between silver, gold, and platinum. I don't know that we have any platinum buildings in Central Florida at all. I am inside a LEED Silver building, which accomplishes a lot. So would you comment on that, number one?
Yeah, I think Chris actually might be the better one to answer that one when it's related to buildings. Chris, are you able to respond to that one?
Yeah, I think, everything is up for discussion.
Okay.
Oftentimes this really comes down to costs. Or how do we provide incentives versus regulation for going through that certification process versus, you know, sort of just kind of having LEED like, if you will, which is sort of what the current ordinances for city facilities is, you know, is to be designed to the point to where they could be certified, but not necessarily going through that process. So it obviously would take the backing of the commission at whatever level of certification that might be, whether that's just registered or whether
the comment I'd make, Chris, is I'm not sure everybody fully appreciates how difficult it is to get those certifications or the cost associated with it. But then closely related to that at the same time is the way the ordinance reads. I didn't write it all down. It says occupied is the first word and then owned, etc. So occupied is the city is perfectly capable of occupying non-city owned space. I don't know what the real estate portfolio looks like. I think it would be difficult for the city to force itself and standards onto space that it might occupy outside of space it owns. So it seems to me it's one goal for community and it's one goal for the city. And it may have meant inside that goal that you literally meant only the space that the city owns, but that's definitely not what it says or the way it's punctuated. And I don't know that you could even come close to achieving that standard unless you think about what your process is for acquiring and then using outside space that you don't own. The food thing, Vanessa, this is a question for you. I was surprised that we're so low on our percentage on food. I mean, there seem to be grocery stores almost everywhere. So I was wondering how that might have been charted. I would have damn thought we'd be at 100%. Understanding 100 might be hard, but I thought the percentage was actually pretty low given what I think of as Winter Park. So
yeah, it's all that darn single family housing. there are large swaths of our city that are primarily single family housing. And so when we do our mapping, there are still 50% that are not within half a mile. And Allison is actually also on this call, and Allison is the one who put together that map for us. So Allison, if you have anything to add, feel free.
Yeah, I think it's the way our city is laid out. It's the lakes and the large single family group together. It's just when you do that bird's eye half mile buffer, it's hard to get that number up.
Wow, it's kind of shocking to think about that because I literally can walk to like four grocery stores. I mean, I don't want to carry all my stuff back, but I can walk to four pretty easily. So it was shocking. The other question I had was about vehicle miles traveled. I guess this is a comment because I'm sure the numbers are correct. I don't doubt it. I think it's pretty obvious that we can't apply state or regional measures back to a group of census tracts that are jurisdictional specific. I think that you laid out some issues associated with your various metrics. Maybe vehicle miles traveled is a really important one, but for sure it's the one that is the least relevant and measurable to what I saw on your entire presentation. It's just way out there and doesn't connect, even if it's a worthy goal. And those are my comments and questions, and thank you.
Yeah, and with vehicle miles traveled, that's definitely one, you know, as soon as I got here and I noticed that was one of the indicators, I was like, why would we ever be doing that? And so that's definitely one that I've, you know, every year kind of just, you know, tried to have conversations with folks, and I know it's just not a good one. So what's great is that we now have a transportation manager, yay, Sarah, and she's on the line as well. And you know, now we can actually hopefully have some indicators that get to the point of why we were looking at something like VMT for the future. And Sarah, you're welcome to comment on that as well.
Sure, and to your point, Owen and Vanessa, vehicle miles traveled, while it's a lofty goal for us in the city with such a small city, it's not very helpful as a metric. So we've been tossing around a couple different ideas, whether it's not just level of service at an intersection, but maybe the delay per vehicle at an intersection or the queue length or the volume to capacity ratio. So we're trying to find different metrics that are more relevant for our smaller cityscape.
You all hear me? I just unmuted myself. Okay.
Good luck.
The other thing you might want to consider on the transportation side, and I know there's the conversation and more of a multimodal balance and not just fixated on vehicles. You may want to work with Emily Hannah with Bike Walk Central Florida, which is right there, a block and a half from City Hall. because they may have a lot of different metrics that you might be able to use to kind of augment the vehicle miles per, you know, travel. Yeah, and that's often used because that's probably one of the easier pieces of data to collect. So yeah. It's there, but especially since we have a lot of through travel, I echo the sentiment. I'm not sure how helpful that is in terms of what we're talking about in terms of sustainability. I think looking at more of a balanced approach from a mode perspective is probably more applicable to the sustainability plan.
Yeah, and I think what happened originally is, you know, they set up vehicle miles thinking about cars, and then we have a separate score for walk and transit and bike, and the thought is, oh, we'll just capture that stuff there separately, and they're kind of thought of almost independently to some degree. But I know, you know, city staff's been working hard on talking about how do we, you know, come up with the right way to track these things and kind of tie it all together. So it's an excellent point, Laura.
We were taking a look too at the walkability score, the bike score, and the transit scores, and we were comparing them to larger urban cities. And that's why our scores seem so low compared to, you know, if you look at Orlando or New York City or Washington, D.C., when you compare it to Winter Park, there's just different infrastructure in place. So to your point, Laura, we're trying to figure out the right ways to represent accurately what's going on in the city.
Well, it also might be helpful to actually compare Winter Park to communities of similar size. I mean, it's grossly unfair when people compare probably almost any city to New York, because it's just, the characteristics are very different. It's had a long-standing history of everyone walking. It's got compact development, all those land use issues that allow for probably more people walking than driving in Manhattan anyway. So that just may be another helpful way to look at it, to get a sense of how we're doing.
Great. It looks like David has his hand up.
Yeah, I've got points or questions. In terms of LEED certification, I agree with Owen that, silver LEED certification is something that is doable. But I would love to see, and I don't know if you all have done this, recommendations for incentivizing LEED construction for developers. And that's the way it's going to happen, is by whether it's impact fee credits or something like that. And I could see something like that coming to P&Z, where we could at least make a recommendation to add to building standards. If we want to move towards that, that's a way to do it. So that's point number one.
And if I could add to that, I would say that we definitely are starting those conversations with Allison and Bront. It was something that we brought up with the Orange Avenue overlay. This idea of, creating this menu that would allow for people to get points and, you know, bonuses or, you know, so to speak, for incentivizing, putting in these kind of, these green programs or green.
I would love to see that come in front of P&Z and move it to the city commission. The other question I had, and I don't even know if this is an issue that the sustainability program is dealing with, but the issue of redevelopment and gentrification, especially of minority neighborhoods. I don't know if there's been any work done on protecting those neighborhoods, setting standards. It's a tough deal and a tough issue, but I think it's also a huge issue that the city needs to look at.
Yeah, we definitely appreciate that comment, David. There are the sustainability program recently went through a racial equity workshop that was several weeks long that definitely talked about integrating equity into our projects and our plans and at every level of policy. So we appreciate that kind of, you know, direction, or you even mentioning that, because that's not something that was really in our previous plan, and we really would like to see that be something that we can actually have in this new plan. Chris, I don't know if you wanted to add anything on that.
No, I mean, I certainly see the need for it. How you know, how we look at trying to work that into our plan. I think there's a couple of different ways. I mean, we've kind of talked about, you know, ways that even sort of right now, a lot of these goals are citywide, but can we break some of these goals to be a little bit more, I don't know, districts or something within the city that we can target to look at areas of improvement. And it's not only for things like that, but we've talked about lakes and water quality and, you know, a few other things that rather than just saying citywide, you know, maybe we should look at certain areas within the city as ways of sort of moving these things forward that we can track and providing ways in which we can sort of enhance certain areas. But at the same point, the more you enhance those areas, the more they become attractive for gentrification. So, you know, it's slippery, but it's definitely something that I think would be definitely good to add to the plan.
And I have to assume the cities all across the country are dealing with this issue. And even if we just got information on what other like-minded cities are doing, what programs are in place, and I understand how difficult it is on the one hand to maintain the quality and integrity and history of these communities, and at the same time not take away the ability for people to sell their homes if they want. So, but I would love to get more information on that. Something I'm very interested in.
Great point. Ellen, did you have another comment? You had your hand up still, so I didn't know.
Yeah, I don't believe the city of Winter Park is an active participant in PACE, which is somewhat controversial. Then I stand corrected. But for those that don't know what PACE is, it is a way to actually address gentrification, David, in particular, because it provides better access. I didn't want to say easy. I started to say easy. Improved access to capital for energy improvements. And it comes in the guise of an assessment that goes on your bill, on your tax bill. So it's spread out over a longer period of time. And the city has approved contractors, at least in the normal arrangement, the city has approved contractors that can make these energy improvements. And I mean, and that's an obvious way to keep a neighborhood intact. And part of the sustainability is improving the life cycle value of life cycle cost of a home, as opposed to just reducing the energy costs on a one-time basis. So just informational.
Thank you.
Yeah, and just to follow up on that, I think Chris might have more info on this, but they are working on an update to the PACE because it's a statewide policy that folks pass either at a municipal or a local, like a county level. Winter Park is one that has PACE, so does Orlando. And I know that Orange County is considering it and has been considering it for a while. I believe in the update that they're working on right now, it might also include the ability to replace septic tanks, right, Chris? I think that was one of them.
Right, that's correct. So currently that funding could be used for, you know, solar or wind mitigation or energy efficiency upgrades. Yeah, they are talking about through this current bill.
I think it's a great program. The only city I know that has used it a lot in this region, I mean, that I'm familiar with, several of them have it. I don't know how extensively they use it, is Kissimmee. And it may be inside a different network. So you might want to check with that. And of course, Kissimmee is a little larger, but it also has many more less income families. So it might be interesting to see how those households are plugging into the program. But it does seem like it should be on your list in some way.
Okay, thanks, Ellen. Are there any other questions from P&Z at this time? I have a couple on my own, but I want to be respectful of your time and ask you guys first. Okay. One question I did have is, I know we talked about LEED Silver, we talked about you know, I think it's written in there too, maybe some, it doesn't necessarily have to be LEED. That could be a GCB certification as well. Is there any kind of, in your all's mind, preference or lean as far as, are you guys open to other green programs and how that's structured, or is LEED kind of the one and only? Just thoughts on that.
Well, Ben, I don't totally follow your comment. I'm sorry, but my office building is silver, and we around the country occupy probably about 1 million square feet, and we are committed to LEEDs. Now, and the reason I bring this up, because I think in very few exceptions, we are the owner occupants of our buildings, which isn't necessarily a good way for us to be spending our money, but we're still owner occupants. So in this regard, we're comparable to the city. And we decided as a firm, we can't afford anything more than silver. I mean, at some point the cost is really prohibitive. And I think that it is a very achievable goal. And maybe you change your threshold over time. Maybe for the next several years, you try to promote certification or silver. And then future years, you try to go to the equivalent of gold. My guess is for the most part, gold and platinum are really open only to a handful of structures that can really afford to make the statement. And maybe, you know, maybe our city is, as a user, is capable of doing that. I, as a landlord owner, just couldn't even begin to do it because it was that much greater. It was exponentially greater to get to those higher standards.
And I understand. I think that's kind of maybe the gist of my question as far as from the cost. Just background with me, I'm a civil engineer. I literally just helped, was on the team that helped the city of Palm Coast get their community center to LEED Silver. That got awarded last week. So I'm very familiar with the process, but I also know for a lot of people, it can be just costly to go through the certification itself versus really just implementing the elements of it. So I think that's why there's been some, you know, success and some of these other programs pop up that still have the same intent. So I just didn't know from a feeling of, you know, your all's seats, if there is any preference, if we're still kind of meeting the intent of, you know, essentially installing these green elements.
I kind of think perhaps we look at the city and what the city does, whether it's with their inventory of buildings or what city employees can do, maybe separate from citizens. And Orlando actually separated that out when they went through this process, for, you know, 10 years ago. So where the LEED may be easier to do as a city, but we do not have the scale of development. And Owen, you're better acquainted, David as well, with costs, that if you're doing something smaller and it just may be cost prohibitive to do everything to get to LEED certification.
Let me add this, because you brought this up, Ben. I do work for an engineering firm, and our motivation for doing it was arguably somewhat self-serving. Mm-hmm. We could have met the standards, and we wanted to do that, but there's something in our business model that says, hey, you know, for interacting with our clients, you know, we want to be able to say we achieved this. The underlying motivation here becomes important, not just the cost, but again, just to emphasize, you're right. The process of certification it's absurdly expensive, frankly, absurdly. But I don't know why we couldn't have an informal support of the less formal process, unless you're really trying to make this, you know, this statement, which our firm was. I mean, so there was an underlying motive, if you will, not selfish, but underlying.
Understood. Okay, thanks.
The other thing, Owen, I think that may be a better fit for Winter Park, because we're also looking at potential maybe retrofits or more remodelings or small scale redos. And I think, you know, Vanessa mentioned the matrix, like what we discussed, Ben, with the over Orange Avenue overlay. I think if you have incentives for people to do take these extra steps, I think that's a good way to try to implement some of these goals. And then you can see what worked, what's attractive and what isn't in terms of, you know, what people pick and choose to implement.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love that aspect of it when we're going through as far as letting, at least on the overlay, we talked about letting folks pick and have that incentive there. And I think certainly we would want that cooperation between our board and, you know, others as far as, you know, what makes sense from a targeted approach on incentives. So.
Yeah, just you, from a planning perspective, since that's I'm on the planning board and that's also my profession. If you don't want to make it more difficult to navigate the approval process by adding a bunch of extra requirements, you want to kind of flip that. And I find using incentives a wonderful way to encourage people to kind of nudge them in the direction you want to go.
At least initially, until you start this movement.
Yeah.
And then, you know, once you've had early adopters, you can think about other options. I did want to make one other comment, if I could, is several things that are on your list, which is why I was talking or asking about vehicle miles traveled before, are not things that the city necessarily controls. I mean, your measure is not a controllable measure. It's also not something the city controls. So when we talk about, for example, the transit score or the bike score, the transit score, I mean, the only thing we can do to control that is either dump money into links or make sure that we have appropriate good transit stops at the right locations. So, you know, our measures, for example, on that might be something related to, you know, how many bus shelters and how many we're going to produce each year, how many dedicated stops are we going to create, because we can't really improve the transit score. On the bike score, you know, to the degree we put up signage and create bike lanes, you know, we can control that. We can't make people use them, just like we can't make people use transit. So I offer that comment. So I think you in total have the same problem that every community has on every measure. We often want to measure something and our outputs don't necessarily nicely correlate to what it is we either control or what we're putting in. So we tend to talk in very physical things that we don't necessarily oversee, and that causes a problem.
Yeah, no, I understand. I think to your point, what we've ended up doing each one of these conversations we've had with different boards is really getting back to methodology. What are we trying to get to and how do we measure that? And for instance, you're talking about bike score, you know, maybe we don't do a bike score. I know we talked with them, we talked with Sarah about maybe instead, you know, we lay out a plan as far as what improvements need to be made to bike paths, and then we track that and we make sure we're hitting that. So maybe we say, hey, we want 1 mile of bike path to be improved each year, and then we can have control over that. And I think that's what we're trying to get to at this point, but you're exactly right. How can we track it and make sure we're staying on top of it and making progress? Before we get too far here, I did want to open up. Did any of the Sustainability Advisory Board members have questions for RP&Z about any one of these credits?
I had a question. You were talking about other programs besides LEADS. Have we looked at if there might be another program that would be better, the pros or cons of the of programs other than LEADS?
Chris, do you want to talk on that? I know there are, you know, different certifying, and I think anything we would write, we would probably want to include those because I think some of them are more affordable than LEED, but they might not have the notoriety of LEED. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, so I mean, there's multiple green building certification programs out there. I mean, there's also the WELL building program. You may have seen commercials for that here recently with a bunch of celebrities. So there's quite a menu of different green building programs out there with a range in certification costs depending upon the type and square footage of the building. So that, you know, I think anything that we would do would accommodate multiple certification programs, because as we've looked at these in the past, we have seen cities that, you know, kind of have been able to provide some commonality between all of them so that any of them could potentially be used within these programs. So you're not limited to just one. Ben, if one quick thing before, you know, we get too far along, just in regards to timeline, so that everyone's aware, so that, you know, primarily what we're looking to achieve over this next year is, you know, we've had these initial meetings with our boards. We hope to do further outreach with the community, as well as, you know, anyone that has comments that they email or let any of our board members know. Our goal is to try to come back sort of early summer to each of the boards with some updated proposals to what these metrics might look like to work through, and then hopefully look for requesting a recommendation of those updated proposals so that we can then go back to the commission hopefully sometime around September or October with an updated plan for updated adoption. So that just sort of gives you a timeline as to where things are headed.
Yeah, I think I'm correct in saying that we've met with most of the boards at this point. I know we're meeting with the utility board here in the coming weeks, but now that we've kind of gone through the first initial rush and a lot of it got into the methodology, we certainly want to follow back up with each of them. Essentially, once we've determined, hey, this is how we're going to track it, then it's a matter of setting the appropriate goal. So if we know we're going to, for the bike path, if we're going to do, you know, go that route, then, you know, is it appropriate to say 1 mile? Is it appropriate to say a half mile or 5 miles? So I think that's kind of going to be the next round as well for us as far as setting those goals.
I do have another question.
Yeah, absolutely.
So overall, you know, you're reaching out to the array of boards. That's great. Are you planning to do any other kind of outreach into the Winter Park community, whether you're dealing with, you know, local business districts or neighborhoods or community-wide workshops or information and utility bills?
Yeah, definitely. We are probably going to go more towards the route of information and utility bills and our e-kiosks through basically the different print options that we have through the city. And I think primarily that's what we'll be focusing on. It's tough with the restrictions in terms of like group gatherings. You know, normally we would have an opportunity every year to reach out to the public at our Earth Day festival or event. We're not doing that this year. We're kind of creating a drive-through collection event where hopefully there we'll also be able to encourage those people who participate to take a survey. We have a survey available at cityofwinterpark.org/sustainability that basically asks them those very same questions of what are your priorities for the sustainability action plan. But we are open, you know, to suggestions definitely for other means of engagement. At this point, as I mentioned, though, it will be more of trying to get to folks on our streets and through their mailboxes. Virtual and real.
Okay, great. Since we're getting close to the end here, Vanessa, I saw you send out the message in chat as far as public comments. Have you heard anybody? I just want to open it up for that.
I haven't. I noticed that I think we have, let me see. We have Commissioners Sullivan and Weaver on as attendees, but they have not submitted a request through the citizen comments. So I'm guessing that means they're okay without getting on the line. Commissioners, if you would like to, please feel free to fill out the comments form. Other than that,
Ben, real quick, one item we didn't really touch on but was mentioned in the presentation was how did the SAP and the comp plan work together? We obviously had a change of leadership in our planning director between when this plan initially went out versus today. At the time, the planning director sort of felt like it was good that they were independent so that there was more flexibility and maybe gave a little bit more oomph to the sustainability action plan not to be tied to the comp plan. So again, not much was brought into the comp plan related to the sustainability action plan. You know, we're certainly open. Obviously that doesn't happen all the time, but you know, the sooner we get an idea as to when those opportunities arise to start to look at that again, you know, maybe there's a different stance on how we might approach that. So I'd be interested to know PNZ's thoughts on that. Of course, I'm sure Bronson and Allison have their ideas as well, but just kind of wanted to touch on that too.
Can I make one other comment? I had written some notes here, which I overlooked, and I wanted that they're comments, questions. You know, we own our own utility, and while I wouldn't be the least bit interested in seeing any digging anywhere, I mean, the idea of a gray water system strikes me as something that needs to be addressed somewhere for water reuse, and we don't have that. And as a person who watches a guy from Winter Garden, he's actually one of our city contractors is from Winter Garden, it appears. He's watering plants on Park Avenue. And when we walk by him with the dog, we're always laughing. It's like, wow, that's a long distance to drive for watering our trees. But this is really less about him watering our trees from Winter Garden and more about, I don't know much about our tree planting program, honestly. And it strikes me that a lot of us really want trees near us and in our medians and may or may not have access to means of either getting them or understanding how that may occur. So two comments there in the forums also of questions, because I would gladly pay a couple hundred bucks to have a tree planted in front of my house. So it's just a comment.
I'll touch on both of those. So for the gray water, the previous action plan does actually have a metric related to reclaimed water availability. Unfortunately, that one's been in development since the action plan. But we are in conversations with David Zusi, the director of the Water and Wastewater Utilities. And next month we are meeting with the Utilities Advisory Board, and I'm sure that our board will bring that up and see how we can move forward or where we are and what's realistic. And then in terms of the tree planting program, we actually did meet with the Tree Preservation Board as well. And they are looking at the best ways for us to really be monitoring our tree canopy, both public and private. And so the plan will have definitely information related to that, to tree coverage in our city.
Are there any other comments or I guess responses to Chris's question just about the planning interaction with the sustainability? Okay. All right. So we have about. There we go. Muted myself. About 5 minutes left. I definitely want to get any last thoughts. Is there anything we're missing? I appreciate some of the comments we got back so far. Really a lot of good suggestions here, things to explore, but wanted to just open up one last time for any last things, you know, looking at this matrix that you think you were really missing the mark or need to explore at least.
Ben, this is Owen. I'm sorry. The comp plan, I think it's very helpful to hear from Laura on this. I mean, I don't know that there's a lot of people on that are still on the call that really appreciate how the comp plan works. You could put anything you want in the comp plan. Arguably, there are some people believe there's way too much stuff in there now. If you had thoughts about putting it in there, I think there are certain things that might come forward into the land development regs, maybe not through the sustainability action plan itself. I think you want to think about how you separate those components, because I do believe there are some matters, I started to say issues, there are some matters here that I think do rise to the level of the comp plan, many that I'm not sure need to be in a comp plan. I think you all need to think about that. And my comment would be, as a P&Z member and a planner like Laura, I have interest in that. I don't in this entire thing. I don't.
Well, Ben, you've heard me talk about this as well as board members, that I believe the comp plan should be the framework or blueprint that guides more specific decisions as you go through the approval development process, or as you make community decisions, because it's not always about land development. I like having the sustainable action plan as kind of a separate document, because it does give you flexibility to adjust as you need to, because you've already pointed out a number of places where you thought some of the metrics would work beautifully and it's not getting you where you want to be. And you don't want to be having to go through and update your comp plan every time you want to make those adjustments. So you want to be able to be flexible on that front. Certainly, these topics are broad enough. I think they can be integrated into some of the goals and objectives in your mobility element, Sarah, as well as the conservation element. I think from a land use perspective, as Owen points out, that gets into the nitty gritty of the land development code and getting into those specifics. A lot of this also will be incentive or market driven, which are not specific components in the comprehensive plan. So I think you can plug in where you think it would be helpful to have that additional support. But just, I just would be very careful about dumping the whole thing in there, because you want to be able to have flexibility to respond as conditions change. So, Owen, I don't know if that's what you were kind of looking for, but those are probably my dime worth of thoughts there instead of two.
That is exactly what I wanted, and I think you conveyed the point. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that was an excellent explanation. Benefits of having separation. So, Vanessa.
Yeah, and Ben, if I could jump in there, if you don't mind, this is Clark, and just coming from the Key Pointer Park Beautiful Board, I don't think we want to necessarily start incorporating future land use elements and goals and objectives and policies and that sort of thing into this document, but having this document, having our sustainability action plan more as one of those things that when it comes time to do an evaluation, appraisal report, or something along those lines for the comp plan or LDRs or whatever that may be, that, this is one of those documents. The sustainability plan is one of those documents that is referenced and looked at as maybe kind of a guiding light, but I don't think we need to incorporate future land use elements into this document, nor does this document need to be incorporated into the comp plan either.
Yeah, Clark, you make a good point. And just to clarify, I was not saying that the comp plan infiltrate this document. It's around. And you would just reference it just like you do with mobility plan or, any number of other documents that you've in studies that the city has completed, whether it's a utility master plan or you know, whatever it may be.
And Ben, if I may, this is Allison, make a comment. So I think what the other thing is, a lot of people focus comp plan is just future land use element, but oftentimes people forget there's, you know, 9 elements of the comp plan. So we have a transportation element, a conservation element, you know, housing element. And I think when we last updated our comp plan, you know, we went through all of those different chapters side by side with this sustainability action plan. And if you do look at those other chapters, there are a lot of the goals and objectives included in those chapters that directly reflect some of the goals of the sustainability action plan.
Allison, thank you for pointing that out. I'm so used to looking at all those different components that it's kind of like second nature, but I forget that everyone doesn't look at it as often as I do.
Right. The future land use is only one chapter of
it's
our...
the first chapter generally, and then you've got the other 8 that touch that in some way. So.
Right. And I feel like a lot of these goals more so relate to those other chapters than future land use.
Absolutely. Yep. Yep, because you got recreation, so there's components with that. Capital improvements, so how you fund things, school element, But I digress. We don't need to do a 101 on the comprehensive plan.
No, it's good for some of us that don't get into as much or others that maybe are not familiar with it. So. Appreciate you bringing that up. We're at 1 o'clock here. I definitely want to respect everybody's time.
He doesn't know the dimension of the sidewalk on the plan. I don't understand that.
So we're just talking. Okay. But thank you all very much for taking your lunch today, taking some time away and adding some very valuable feedback. Again, this is going to be part of a longer process and we'll certainly be back in touch. With this, but thank you for your thoughts and ideas. We'll definitely take that to heart here as we continue to work on this plan.
Thank you. Thank you for your hard work. It's great. It's great to have this underway. So thank you.
Wonderful.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you all very much.
Have a great rest of your day.
Have a good day.
Take care.